This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Welcome to Green Pulse, a podcast series by The Straits Times where we analyse the beats of the changing environment, from biodiversity conservation to climate change. Hi, I'm Audrey Tan and I cover science and environment for The Straits Times. My co-host is David Fogarty.
Hi, I'm David and I'm the climate change editor at The Straits Times.
Our topic today is on recovering from the economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic with a focus on sustainability. Joining us on this episode is Singapore Management University Assistant Professor of Strategic Management, Simon Skilibix. Welcome to the show, Simon.
Audrey, David, very nice to be here.
Simon, many governments around the world have said they would like to help their economies recover with a focus on sustainability. And here in Singapore, politicians have also indicated as much. But a green recovery is such a loaded term. What do you think is the essence of such a recovery, really?
Well, I think to really understand what this green recovery is about, we need to first acknowledge that our pre-COVID economic and industrial system is both very extractive and it also follows a cradle-to-grave pattern. So extractive here means that our primary and secondary industries largely rely on the extraction of natural resources. So that includes fossil fuels, metals, and minerals. And our tertiary industry, including the rapidly growing digital sector, relies on the products produced in the secondary industry to deliver its services. And this extraction, this extractive process, is really damaging to the environment. It creates climate change, and it also has very negative effects for biodiversity. Secondly, the cradle-to-grave pattern refers to the reality that most of the products that we design and bring into the market are very hard to recycle. And so once the products are used, they are destroyed and thrown away. But on a finite planet, there is no away. So our discarded products are burned, landfilled, end up in the oceans, or they are downcycled into products of inferior quality and of inferior value. So this is really the background against which we potentially want to start a green recovery. On top of that, of course, we have a scientific consensus that man-made climate change is real, accelerating, and is going to impose massive challenges for humankind in the not-so-distant future. Our generation already experiences some climate disruption, but our grandchildren will undoubtedly live on a very different planet if we don't rapidly take action to reverse not only climate change, but also the massive biodiversity loss that is going on. And this requires a fundamental change in the way we produce things, the way we think about economic growth, and maybe also the way we live our lives. And thirdly, the COVID crisis has triggered something in people and governments. The Chinese word for crisis consists of two separate words, danger and opportunity. And so the danger is very clear when it comes to the COVID crisis, but also there is a hidden opportunity. And I think the green recovery is really about taking this opportunity seriously. COVID has figuratively stopped the world from spinning and given us some time to reflect about a simple question. What kind of world do we really want to live in? And most governments and people have come up with a very clear answer. We want to live in a more sustainable world. And the European Union is working on a Green Deal that should help realize its ambition to reduce carbon footprints by 55% by 2030 and to zero by 2050. The Democrats in the USA have opposed the Green New Deal. China has made ambitious commitments to become carbon neutral before 2060. And Japan and South Korea have also committed to become carbon neutral by 2050. The green recovery is really about doing both the necessary, maybe also slightly impossible, to achieve these goals. And so there has many different aspects that we can discuss, but this is really the essence of this green recovery, doing what is necessary to achieve the goal that by 2050, we live in a planet that is significantly more sustainable and where we have managed to, if not reverse, then at least halt the current global warming that is going on.
So the idea behind a green recovery is basically that two crises, climate change and the COVID-19 pandemic, can be overcome with a transition away from extractive fossil fuel-based industries and looking for opportunities that comes out in other sectors. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. The COVID crisis really allowed us to sit back and think a little bit. Everyone was stuck in their house for such a long time. And as a consequence, much of the global economy came to a standstill as well. Trade slowed down a lot. Obviously, aviation stopped. Even shipping and so slowed down a lot. So we really had this moment of reflection. Governments and people started to think about, okay, what can we do to get out of this crisis? And can we use this crisis as an opportunity to not just get out of the COVID crisis, but also address a much more existential and a much bigger crisis that we have been facing for a very long time, and that is climate change.
So Simon, what about direct or specific impacts that the pandemic has caused, particularly through economies, in terms of energy demand, and particularly the impacts on extractive or fossil fuel-based industries, for example, falling crude oil prices, job cuts at oil and gas majors, and just generally falling energy demand overall?
So I think the impact on the fossil fuel industry is almost a byproduct of a much bigger change that is happening, right? So if we think about just the reality of climate change, no real scientist is really disputing anymore that carbon dioxide is causing global warming and that man-made carbon dioxide is the key contributor to climate change. And as a consequence, the fossil fuel industries are under attack for this issue. And we have known this since the 70s. In 2018, for instance, Nathaniel Rich from the New York Times published this harrowing story about the decade we almost stopped climate change, and it was the decade from 1979 to 1989. And so I think this fact has been established for a long time. What has changed, and that is kind of my hypothesis, is that COVID has spurred a new wave of climate awareness. And of course, people like Greta Thunberg, for instance, have done a lot of work to increase awareness. You have the Extinction Rebellion movement in the UK that have also moved the needle in this. But COVID has done something different, and I think potentially even something more important. We've seen in recent academic research conducted over the last 6 to 8 months that there is an increase in awareness at the consumer level and at the corporate level about the importance of sustainability and about the importance of reducing your carbon footprint. My personal thesis is that COVID has made people aware that they are physically interconnected. Right? The internet and social media have told people over a decade ago that we are now permanently digitally interconnected. But in many ways, the digital world, and especially social media, is kind of an aspirational world that doesn't capture reality very well. COVID did something different there. Like, it really proved that the tiniest of organisms originating in a single city can infect people all over the world in a record-breaking time. And so it established our physical interconnectedness in a way that I think nothing had done in the last 70 to 80 years. And I think this is really what's going on. And of course, if this hypothesis is true, then people all over the world have started realizing that, okay, we need to take care of not only our own garden, but our entire planet, because any kind of small disruption in this big ecosystem that is our Earth can have a physical effect on my life. It can prevent me from leaving my house for weeks or months, or it can make me sick, or it can even kill me. And I think that awareness has just had a very strong ripple effect on the fossil fuel industry and coal and other kind of extractive industries. I push that example specifically on the fossil fuel industry, is that, for instance, fossil fuel companies like BP, like Shell, what we've seen with them is that they have, in the last year, made sweeping announcements about their commitment to fight climate change after arguably decades and decades of denying and producing fake science and all of that. But right now, what we see there is something very different happening. Even a company like BP that has acknowledged that some of its assets in terms of oil reserves are never going to be extracted, the moment they make that acknowledgement publicly, their stock price went up. So we really see a change in consumers and also in terms of in the investor world, in terms of what it is that is being valued. And I think that it's long overdue, and I hope that this is a promising change that will continue.
Now, if you like what you're hearing so far, do subscribe to our series Green Pulse on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or even on Spotify, and like us and give us a rating. Now, back to our conversation with Assistant Professor Simon Skilibix from the Singapore Management University on what a green recovery means for Singapore.
And so, out of the twin crises of climate change and the pandemic, you know, we also see lots of opportunities, I think, as well, for economies to shift away from extractive and fossil fuel-driven models. So I'm just wondering if you could sort of help listeners sort of understand some of those opportunities, business and job opportunities in emerging sectors globally. And I'll give you one example, which today, Bain & Company, which is a global management consultancy, today produced a report that estimated that if Southeast Asian economies really, really focused heavily on green or sustainable investment in renewable energy, food systems, much better protection of nature, the financial benefits annually from 2030 could be up to $1 trillion a year, both in terms of new growth opportunities, savings, and efficiencies. I mean, that's quite a positive message. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that sort of opportunity and which sort of sectors that could be in globally.
Absolutely. And I would first want to say that I think $1 trillion a year is a conservative estimate. I actually believe it's going to be much more. And also on top of that, there was recently an article in Moral Money, one of the Financial Times newsletters, where they said that by 2050, the annual value of reforestation alone is going to exceed $800 billion. That's just reforestation. And we don't talk about anything that is massively high tech or something, or really big breakthroughs in energy and stuff. So I think the opportunity is bigger. But when it comes specifically to these emerging sectors globally, I think there are two ways of looking at this. Like, there are enormous opportunities. So, of course, low carbon energy, which includes solar, wind and tidal electricity, perhaps also nuclear. That is a debate that is interesting to have. I'm not an expert in it, but maybe we will need to really revisit our perspective on nuclear in order to fight climate change in the long run. So in the energy sector, it's very clear. We need to electrify transportation, create carbon neutral alternatives for heavy fuels used by aviation and tankers. There is a massive opportunity there. We need to invest massively in rebuilding and upgrading our cities' infrastructure, our houses, commercial buildings, so that they can all behave like trees, purify the air, generate oxygen, and produce more energy than they consume. We need to reinvent our primary industries so that they rely less on the mining of virgin materials and more on the reuse of previously mined materials, what is called urban mining. We also need to see a sea change in how we create new materials, spending more research and development on fields such as biomimicry and biofabrication, learning from nature in order to imitate nature so that we can create products or primary materials that have a much lower energy footprint. A typical example is spider silk is about 5 times as strong as steel, yet it requires no energy to produce. We simply haven't figured out how to do it, but it's a biological process that creates a very, very strong material. If we would figure out how a spider makes silk, and if we could mimic that process, we would solve a massive climate problem that is related to the production of steel. The same way you can think about like corals, they build very strong reefs through a calcification process that happens organically. If we can learn to imitate these processes to create materials we need to live without being dependent on continuous extraction, we can move a very long way in terms of addressing or preventing further climate change. The same thing also is necessary for our agricultural practices. And this may obviously also involve changing human behavior. At the moment, we eat too much as a global population. We throw away too much food while others are starving. We should all reduce our meat consumption, not even from a climate perspective, but just to be healthier. And we need to move towards polyculture to restore soils. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of things that you can say. And the same thing also goes again for the secondary industry. So we need to reinvent those so that they move away from this cradle to grave way of producing to a cradle to cradle way of producing, following the principles of the circular economy. This is extremely important. And we need to incentivize everyone who's part of the tertiary economy, and again, including the digital economy, to become part of the solution. And the best way they can do that is often by integrating positive impact into the processes so that every single transaction that happens online and offline somehow contributes to the restoration and the regeneration of the natural world. But my main takeaway here is that there is, I think, in many countries, a big fear that these emerging technologies and these emerging sectors, that they are somewhat fundamentally different from what we have been doing in the past. And to a certain extent, that is true. But if you look at it from another perspective, they're potentially also very similar. And as a consequence, I don't think it is something that we should really fear as a civilization or as a people or as a nation. There is going to be a change. There are going to be new types of jobs are going to emerge. Old types of jobs are going to disappear, as has always been the case. At that level, the new emerging sectors that are arriving in terms of mainly around clean energy in terms of new ways of innovation, looking at biomimicry, and in terms of finding digital solutions for things that used to happen in the physical space, like what we are doing now, having a podcast online so that we kind of reduce our need for transportation. Yes, all these things are going to happen, but they're not going to lead to necessarily massive disruptions, I think, in the way people are working at the moment. So it's not something that I would fear as a country or as a world in general. It's something I would embrace, and I think the opportunities are going to be very positive.
So thank you, Simon, for joining us today and demystifying the concept of green recovery for us.
You're very welcome. Happy to come back whenever you want.
Tune in to the second part of this episode for more on the opportunities for Singapore in a post-COVID world. For more on climate change and the environment, do check out the stories in the Straits Times. That's a wrap for Green Pulse, and we hope you enjoyed our discussion.
That was an SPH podcast by the Straits Times. Find us on Spotify, Apple or Google Podcasts, or streaming on Google Home. Do feedback to us at podcast@sbh.com.sg.
You can also check out more podcasts on various topics at The Straits Times, The Business Times and Money FM 89.3.